content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service.
And this is the May 2023 edition of Education Today. We'll get started with an article from U.S. News titled, Florida is number one in education, but some give DeSantis an F for reforms. Experts say the Sunshine State's lauded education system, number one in the U.S. News Best States rankings, faces an urgent threat. Governor Ron DeSantis. By Lauren Camera, posted May 3, 2023. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis likes to brag about his state's education system, and for good reason. Florida's sprawling higher education system, which enrolls roughly 1 million students across 12 public universities or colleges and 28 community and state colleges, keeps in-state tuition and fees low, very low, at less than $5,000 on average for four-year institutions, according to recent data. And at a moment when schools are struggling to retain students, nearly three-quarters of those enrolled in four-year degree programs graduate in a timely manner, as do more than half of those enrolled in two-year programs. When it comes to debt upon graduation, Florida boasts one of the lowest burdens on borrowers in the country. The Sunshine State's public K-12 system doesn't carry the same accolades as its higher education offerings, but it's nothing to scoff at either. While the state's math and reading scores aren't a standout bright spot, students largely scored in the middle of the pack on the 2022 National Assessment of Educational Progress. It reports a recent 90% high school graduation rate, and nearly half of all students are college ready, having passed benchmarks on the SAT or ACT. The powerful combination is what landed Florida at the top of U.S. News & World Report's Best States for Education rankings. But DeSantis, a likely GOP candidate in the 2024 presidential election, and the only Republican challenger currently polling in striking distance of former President Donald Trump, has been heavily touting another education record of late, one that some experts worry may eventually undermine the quality of education in the state. As he makes strategic visits to Iowa, the first in-the-nation caucus state for Republicans, and other important early primary states like Nevada, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, DeSantis is highlighting a controversial platform that poured accelerant on long-standing culture wars by attempting to curb access to education about race and inequality, LGBTQ issues, and gender identity, and to foist a sweeping conservative takeover on higher education. Now, some are worried that his supercharged agenda is undermining trust in the state's public education systems. The major divide between states like Florida and the states and localities that have performed poorly in recent years may very well be the issue of wokeness, DeSantis writes in his new memoir, The Courage to be Free, in which he cites Florida's number one ranking for higher education in the U.S. News Best States assessment. The state has placed number one in that subcategory every year since the rankings launched in 2017. What jurisdiction governed by leftist ideology would one point to as a success, he asks? From Los Angeles and San Francisco to New York and Chicago, virtually every jurisdiction that has adopted a leftist governing philosophy has seen major problems, including increasing crime, loss of population, erosion in education quality, and decline in the overall quality of life. What these jurisdictions have in wokeness, their leaders lack in basic common sense. Compared to these leftist fiefdoms, Florida is a redoubt of sanity, the place where woke ideology goes to die. The message, one likely to woo conservative voters in a primary that by all accounts will go to the contender who can stake out the farthest right position, has energized Republicans and resulted in other GOP governors pushing copycat platforms and similar, if not the exact same, bills in their state legislatures. But critics in Florida and around the country say the message is a dangerous one, and that coupled with major legislative changes to K-12 and higher education operations, DeSantis stands to inflict blunt force trauma to the very system that makes Florida stand out. One of the things that we're seeing in the entire system, from pre-K through higher ed, is this attack on free thought and on diversity and equity and inclusion, and this idea of trusting the experts, says Andrew Spahr, president of the Florida Education Association, the state's largest teachers' union. We should be talking about how we're addressing reading instruction in elementary school, but there's no conversation happening about reading in the state of Florida right now. Instead, it's about whether or not we should have transgender bathrooms, and it's about whether or not we teach woke in our schools, and whether woke is a bad thing. We're going to see significant negative impacts on our students' learning as we move forward. Earlier this year, DeSantis unveiled a sweeping new proposal for state colleges and universities, one that would defund diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, give boards of trustees the power to review tenure at any time, and establish mandatory courses in Western civilization. He threatened that Florida may stop offering advanced placement courses and SAT tests from the College Board, part of the fallout from his feud with the assessment company over its new AP African American Studies course. And we'll cut that article short for time.
The next article comes from Education Week, and it's titled AI Literacy Explained by Allison Klein, posted May 10, 2023. K-12 students have grown up in a world where artificial intelligence informs what their families buy at the grocery store, how scientists track the spread of diseases, and even how the photo filters work on their favorite social media apps. But the technology was largely invisible to them and their teachers until a new version of ChatGPT burst onto the educational scene late last year. The tool can spit out an essay on Shakespeare, a detective novel, or a legal brief that appears remarkably like something a human has labored over. It can also do computer coding. The technology poured accelerant on a conversation already underway. Now that AI is shaping nearly every aspect of our lives and is expected to transform fields from medicine to agriculture to policing, what do students need to understand about AI to be prepared for the world of work, to be a smart consumer and a responsible citizen? The AI genie is out of the bottle, said Cynthia Breezeal, a professor of media arts and sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It's not just in the realm of computer science and coding. It is affecting all aspects of society. It's the machine under everything. It's critical for all students to have AI literacy if they are going to be using computers or really almost any type of technology in their daily lives. The question of what makes a person AI literate is evolving, but it involves delving into technical questions like, what's happening under the hood? How does it work? How does it impact me and the world around us, said Brian Cox, the lead computer science specialist at the Georgia Education Department. AI literacy is something that every student needs exposure to, not just those who are planning on a career in computer science, experts argue. When we all went to school, we learned how the light bulbs work, or how the digestive system works, or how photosynthesis works, said Hardy Partovi, the CEO of Code.org, which works to expand computer science offerings in K-12 schools. And you teach those things to everybody, not just the botanists or the electricians or the surgeons. You learn these things to have a better understanding of your world. But most people don't know how the internet works, how a smartphone works, how an algorithm works, and they definitely don't know how AI works. Here's how to begin developing AI literacy, according to experts and educators. 1. Why it's vital to have a basic understanding of how AI works. Grasping the technical aspects of AI, how the technology perceives the world, how it collects and processes data, and how those data can inform decisions and recommendations, can help temper the oftentimes inaccurate perception that AI is an all-knowing, infallible force, experts say. We need to demystify how these systems work, how you build these things, at a grade-appropriate kind of level, because there's so much hype and confusion, Breezeal said. People talk about these things like a conscious ether that surrounds us. Students need to understand that we're really talking about something people actually make and control and engineer. Artificial intelligence technologies replicate human-like intelligence by training machines and computer systems to do tasks that simulate some of what the human brain can do. It relies on systems that can actually learn, usually by analyzing vast quantities of data and searching out new patterns and relationships. These systems can actually improve over time, becoming more complex and accurate as they take in more information. To be sure, some students can delve deeper into the inner workings of AI than others, she added. If you're an AP computer science kid, you're going to get a little more into the technical weeds about it, Breezeal said. But all students must grasp that the decisions that AI makes, whether it's to recommend a particular pair of boots to an Amazon customer or to flag a job applicant as a promising prospect for an employer, aren't driven by the same kind of nuanced and creative reasoning a human can perform. Instead, it's really advanced guesswork, Partovi said. AI right now is based on probability and statistics. It makes errors. It can spread misinformation. It can have bias. Understanding how it actually works underneath is important so that people recognize the weaknesses it has. And Partovi noted that students still need to learn how to write, even though the writing skills of technologies like ChatGPT are more sophisticated than most people might have imagined. The same idea applies to learning computer coding, he said. The superpowers of AI are only available to people who know how to write or how to code, Partovi said. In fact, students want to know more about AI. More than 9 in 10 teens say they would be interested in learning in high school about how to work with artificial intelligence, according to a survey by the nonprofit Junior Achievement with the marketing and data firm Big Village, conducted between February and March of this year. Students should have some idea of how machines perceive the world, said Breezeal, citing a framework developed by AI for K-12, a nonprofit organization aimed at helping schools teach AI. That means discussing things like speech recognition technology, sensors, and machine vision, and understanding how they work. Children in early elementary school, for instance, could start with a simple lesson in which they identify the human organs, ears, eyes, involved in hearing and seeing, and then find their technological counterparts, microphone, camera, on a digital device. Students also need to understand how biases in the data that's used to train AI can allow the technology to continue to perpetuate discriminatory policies unless humans recognize the problem and do something about it. We're going to cut the article short for time, but here's the rest of the list. 2. Give students hands-on opportunities to understand how the technology works. 3. Discuss and analyze ethical questions about the technology. 4. How to interact effectively with AI. 5. Let students know that AI skills are not just for computer science experts. The next article comes from the New York Times, and it's titled, New York is forcing schools to change how they teach children to read. Half of children in grades 3-8 fail reading tests. The city's schools chancellor, who has faulted the current approach, will begin rolling out new curriculums next year. By Troy Clausen, posted May 9, 2023. Hundreds of public schools have been teaching reading the wrong way for the last 2 decades, leaving an untold number of children struggling to acquire a crucial life skill, according to New York City's schools chancellor. Now, David C. Banks, the chancellor, wants to sound the alarm and is planning to force the nation's largest school system to take a new approach. On Tuesday, Mr. Banks announced major changes to reading instruction in an aim to tackle a persistent problem. About half of city children in grades 3-8 are not proficient in reading. Black, Latino, and low-income children fare even worse. In a recent interview, Mr. Banks said that the city's approach had been fundamentally flawed and had failed to follow the science of how students learn to read. "It's not your fault. It's not your child's fault. It was our fault," Mr. Banks said. "This is the beginning of a massive turnaround." Over the next 2 years, the city's 32 local school districts will adopt one of 3 curriculums selected by their superintendents. The curriculums use evidence-supported practices, including phonics, which teaches children how to decode letter sounds, and avoid strategies many reading experts say are flawed, like teaching children to use picture clues to guess words. The move represents a sea change in a city where principals have historically retained authority over approaches to teaching at their individual schools. Half of the districts will begin the program in September, the others will start in 2024. Waivers to opt out will only be considered for schools where more than 85% of students are proficient in reading, a threshold that only about 20 schools meet. The section is called The Nation's Biggest District Joins a Push to Change Reading. The move represents the most significant reading overhaul in New York City since the early 2000s, when some of the programs that the chancellor is now trying to uproot were first ushered in. It will immediately place the city at the forefront of a growing national movement to reform reading instruction. Experts, lawmakers, and families have pushed to abandon strategies that a mass of research shows do not work for all students, and to embrace a set of practices known as the, quote, science of reading. The stakes are clear. Children who cannot read well by third grade are at a disadvantage. They are more likely to drop out of high school, face incarceration, and live in poverty as adults. Still, curriculum reform is an enormous undertaking. The challenges are perhaps nowhere more apparent than in New York City, a sprawling system of some 700 elementary schools and a large population of disadvantaged children. The city has been among the top markets for a beloved balanced literacy curriculum. The approach aims to nurture a passion for books, but has been criticized at times for including too little systematic instruction in core reading skills. Mr. Banks called the approach an old way that has failed far too many kids. The new plan is backed by the teachers' union, but has attracted immediate skepticism from some teachers, who often say major changes come with insufficient training. It has also drawn ire from the city's principals' union, which has called a uniform curricular approach pedagogically unsound in such a large system. But New York City has never offered the right blueprint on reading, Mr. Banks said. It has left teachers blamed for failures that were not their own, he said, and families without answers to what went wrong when their children fell behind. As national reading scores have stagnated, nearly 20 states have prioritized phonics alongside work to expand students' background knowledge, vocabulary, and oral language skills, which research shows most children need to grasp how to decode words and understand what they read. I'm thrilled, Susan Newman, an early literacy development expert and a former U.S. Assistant Secretary for Elementary and Secondary Education, said of the city's plans. This is a bold effort, she said, and I think it's very much the right way to go. The next section is titled, Changing Reading Instruction Will Mean Changing Teachers. If New York City's announcement is the starting line, a challenging road lies ahead. Research shows that a new curriculum alone does not boost student outcomes. Major changes require teachers to reshape their existing practices and understanding of a subject through intensive training and coaching. Otherwise, they may lean on old instincts. Even supporters of the plan admit that much can go wrong. Some worry that the other side of literacy, writing, needs more substantial attention, or that unaddressed pandemic learning losses could hinder progress. And addressing how elementary schools teach reading to younger students will not help older students who missed learning those skills. The city will also need to overcome the frustrations of many school leaders over the plan's rollout, as well as the fervent belief that some have in the programs they now use. Hundreds of elementary schools in 2019 used a popular balanced literacy curriculum from Teachers College known as Units of Study, a report by two local news outlets, Chalkbeat and The City, shows. The curriculum has received failing marks from one major organization that rates program quality, but many school leaders value its attention to developing children's passion for books, as well as its robust professional development offerings for teachers. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from USA Today, and it's titled, Mother of Six-Year-Old Who Shot Teacher Apologizes, Can't Explain How He Got the Gun. By Nirvi Shah with USA Today, posted May 10, 2023. The mother of the six-year-old boy who shot his teacher at a Newport News, Virginia elementary school in January apologized for his actions, but neither she nor her lawyer could explain how the first grader accessed the gun. I am, as a parent, obviously willing to take responsibility for him because he can't take responsibility, Deja Taylor said in an interview with Good Morning America that aired Wednesday. Taylor, 25, also said her son liked his teacher, Abigail Zwerner of Richneck Elementary, and she, too, was building a relationship with Zwerner, though in the days ahead of the January 6 incident, her son had complained about events at school. He actually really liked her. I will say that week, he felt like he was being ignored, Taylor recalled, remembering her son saying, "I don't think that she was listening to me. I didn't like that." Earlier that week, the teacher asked the child to sit down. He threw his arms up in the air and said, "Fine," and when he threw his arms up, he knocked her phone out of her hand on accident, Taylor said. That led to a suspension, she said. A legal notice filed by Zwirner's lawyers described the incident differently, saying the boy slammed Zwirner's cell phone and broke it, leading to a one-day suspension. When the boy returned to her class the next day, he pulled his mother's 9mm handgun out of his pocket and shot her, the legal notice said. Zwirner, 25, was shot in the hand and chest. The boy who shot Zwirner had constantly cursed at staff and teachers, tried to whip students with his belt, and once choked another student, quote, "until she couldn't breathe," Zwirner's legal notice of her intent to sue the school district said. The next section is titled, "Boy Rarely Speaks About the Day of the Shooting." Taylor told Good Morning America that her son has ADHD and that, while some children with the condition may only be mildly affected, quote, "he's off the wall, doesn't sit still ever." But he had progressed with the help of medication and was meeting academic goals, Taylor said, leading to a shift in how he was dropped off at a school that began the week of the shooting. She said he rarely talks about the shooting. His great-grandfather, Calvin Taylor, who now has custody of the child, said he's more likely to talk about the days before the shooting than the incident itself. Deja Taylor was charged with felony child neglect and recklessly leaving a loaded firearm so as to endanger a child, a misdemeanor, in April. The boy's family has said the gun, which his mother legally obtained, was kept in a locked box. They couldn't say how he got a hold of it. "We are not ready to discuss that at this point," Taylor's lawyer James Ellenson told Good Morning America. "I don't know that any adult knows how he got the gun." The next section is titled History of Violence. A lawsuit Zwirner filed against the school district says the defendants knew the boy, quote, had a history of random violence at school and at home, including an episode the year before when he strangled and choked his kindergarten teacher. All defendants knew that John Doe attacked students and teachers alike, and his motivation to injure was directed toward anyone in his path, both in and out of school, and was not limited to teachers while at the school, the lawsuit says. School officials removed the boy from Richneck and sent him to another school for the remainder of the year, but allowed him to return to Richneck for first grade in fall 2022, the lawsuit says. The Newport News School District, which has asked that the case be dismissed, said her injuries are covered by workers' compensation. "I just truly would like to apologize that she, Zwirner, did get hurt," the boy's mother said on Good Morning America. "We were actually kind of forming a relationship with me having to be in the classroom, and she is really a bright person." Zwirner's attorney, Diane Toscano, told reporters in January that concerned school staff members had warned administrators 3 times the child had a gun and was threatening other students in the hours before he shot Zwirner. Toscano said the school administration was paralyzed by apathy and didn't call police, remove the boy from class, or lock down the school. The Newport News school superintendent was fired by the school board after the shooting, and the Richneck Elementary assistant principal resigned. The principal was reassigned to another job within the school district. The board also voted to install metal detectors in every school in the district, beginning with Richneck, and to purchase clear backpacks for all students. The Newport News School District has asked that Zwirner's $40 million lawsuit against the school system be dismissed. The school district said her injuries are covered by workers' compensation. The next article comes from NBC News, and it's titled, "Colorado Expands Translation Access for Parents of Special Ed Students." Parents of children with special needs who require individualized lesson plans were getting translated materials too late in the process, education advocates said. By Edwin Flores, posted May 4, 2023. A bill recently passed in the Colorado legislature will help expand access to translated education documents for parents who don't speak English fluently and who have children with disabilities. The bill passed Saturday, known as HB 1623, will help expand access to translator and interpreter services, and a separate bill would allocate a pool of $500,000 to which school districts can apply. Parents and advocates have touted the need for translated documents related to an individualized education plan process, also known as an IEP, which is a lesson plan specifically designed for an individual K-12 student with special needs, such as a child with autism. To develop an IEP, parents meet with school administrators and teachers on an annual basis. As required by federal law, parents must receive a final draft translated into their preferred language. But education advocates say the final draft comes too late in the process to allow parents to make changes or ask questions about the draft, which can include technical language. Bree Buentello, a former special needs teacher and director of government affairs for Stanford Children Colorado, an education advocacy group, said the legislation is a long-awaited win for parents and community leaders in the state who have advocated for the expansion of services and resources. "I've seen the disproportionate impact that a language barrier brings, specifically in Latino kids," she said. "It's going to drastically increase parental involvement in the IEP process. This is going to lead us to better serving students." The bill received bipartisan support and was sponsored by State Democratic Representative Lorena Garcia, who is CEO of the Colorado Statewide Parent Coalition, and State Representative Mary Young, also a Democrat, who is a retired school psychologist and special education teacher. "The parent is a crucial part of the team. Their feedback and knowledge as an expert on their child is just as important as the teacher's expertise as an educator," said Michelle Brenner, Director of Special Education for the Boulder Valley School District. The district has 56 schools with more than 31,000 students, according to its website. Latinos account for the second largest student demographic group, 19.4%, after white students, 67.4%. Brenner noted how the district has taken the initiative in recent years to provide parents with additionally orally translated conversations ahead of the IEP final draft, including providing families with English rough drafts and asking if they'd like to speak with someone in their preferred language to walk them through the materials. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. This final article comes from the Washington Post, and it's titled, "Students Can't Get Off Their Phones, Schools Have Had Enough. Administrators See Them as an Intensifying Distraction, or Worse, Attacks on Students' Mental Health," by Donna St. George, posted May 9, 2023. When students returned to school during the pandemic, educators quickly saw a change in their cell phone habits. More than ever, they were glued to the devices during class, posting on social media, searching YouTube, texting friends. So this year, schools in Ohio, Colorado, Maryland, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Virginia, California, and others banned the devices in class to curb student obsession, learning disruption, disciplinary incidents, and mental health worries. "We basically said, this has got to stop," said Dayton Public School Superintendent Elizabeth Lawley. "We've got academic issues that are not going to be fixed if our students continue to sit on their phones." Most school systems already had cell phone bans in 2020, according to federal data, but the pandemic brought more urgency to places with lenient rules or lax enforcement. Some invested in ways to lock up phones away during school hours. Others forced students to keep them hidden away, with strict penalties for violations. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. We've run out of time for this episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.